What are your feelings about the women's movement today?
Well, I think it's all right. I don't think that they should try and push themselves into strictly men's clubs or men's wrestling matches or boxing matches, or they should do it on their own separate score, like having a full woman's baseball team or a woman's basketball team, not to compete with the men. Yeah, I think it's all right. I think it's fine. Women should be able to hold jobs just like I did, whether they're for man or for woman, because a woman is equally some women are more mechanical than others, and some men aren't as mechanical as others. So I think it's all right for women to go into that field too, which they have proven themselves. There's the linemen for the telephone and electric companies, and we have them in the garages where they can repair a car as well as any man can. So I never tried to change tire myself, but I imagine I could. And I do know something about the engine on the car. I can do very minor repairs. So I think that's all right, too. There's the women engineers that are really, I think that sometimes maybe a woman engineer would be a little bit better than a man, because she has to have minute things to do with what comes naturally for her, like preparing a meal. And engineering is very limited. No, I think that's fine.
Girls are growing up very differently now than they did when you grew up.
Oh, very much different. Very, very much different. They're more outgoing and everything. We were more or less kind of kept down. But I never knew it, really. I just didn't. I went ahead and did my thing then, just like I do now. I used to get a hammer and hammer nails with the best of them, and I used to play marbles with the boys, and I could do as good as they did. So, there's a lot of things that are open to women now that weren't open to them when I was growing up. Most any job when I was growing up, during my late teens, was in an office or in a factory where I would be sewing or housework. That was about all a woman could get to do. Well, I didn't care for the office end of things. That was too stuffy. There weren't enough people. I like people. So I did go into the sewing end of things. And it was to my advantage. And not only was I able to make my own clothes, I'm still doing it. But I learned how to be more conservative, too.
In what way do you mean conservative?
Well,
saving things.
Saving things and like turning my clothes inside out and making them on the other side rather than. Yeah. And those clothes that aren't all worn out, right? Making a quilt out of them and blanket. Yeah.
What kinds of things would you like to see for your granddaughter?
Well, I hope she won't have to do the manual work that I have. I hope it'll be easier for her. Like maybe get into electronics and something on that. Well, maybe a little more mental and a little less physical work. She'll have to work more than likely. Yeah, most people do. So, and I think it's good for them. Work never hurt anybody. Although I think sometimes work can be too heavy. And I think I did a lot of that, too heavy work. So, not only, when I was on the farm, but afterwards.
What are your thoughts about the ERA? The ERA, Equal Rights Amendment.
Oh, that's fine too. I think, when you see a minority, elevated the standard of living, you have also elevated yours. Oh, yes. I think that's fine. Well, that's another two-way street.
Addie, what was the happiest time of your life?
Oh, my. I think I've always been happy, really, in the most, even in the darkest moments. I've had my happy moments. I was happy as a child. I was happy for a while with my first marriage. I can't say that happiness entered into it with my second marriage. But I was happy as a mother. And now I'm happy. I'm going into an apartment of my own. No, I think I've always had a happy turn of the mind, looking at the brighter side rather than at the darker. We all have them. We all have our moments of disillusionment and sometimes desperation. But this we have to overcome, because that can go into despondency. And I've never been despondent. I've always felt there was a brighter side.
What are your thoughts about the future? What do you think about when you think about the future?
It's a day-to-day affair. I'm getting us kind of at the end of the line, I realize. I hope that I see things looking better for those I'm going to leave behind me. Better than I had, I hope. But it's just a day-to-day affair. I hope I go quick when I go, which I think everybody wishes that too. And like I say, in my father's house there are many mansions, and I'll be in one of them. That's it.
Excellent.
I don't think there's anything else that we can wish for, because we can't see tomorrow. We can only see right now. And I think our destination is all prearranged, and we're going to do what our Heavenly Father has assigned us to do. And we won't do it until our work here on earth is done. I think everything is going to be just wonderful. And I hope everything will be wonderful, those I leave behind. I have no qualms about the days ahead. I think you probably couldn't kill me with an axe, but I look forward to a few more years anyway.
If you could summarize the years that you spent at Douglas during the war and what that experience meant to you, what would that be?
I'd say it was one of the best years. Those were my best years, really. They were my most productive because I had responsibilities to meet, and Douglas wages helped me to meet them. I could give my children more, and I did, by making more. Oh, I think really, when it comes right down to it, those Douglas years were about the happiest, the most productive.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about that I've left out that you've forgotten or remembered?
I can't think of anything. No, just that I hated to see my son go in the service, but I wouldn't have wanted him not to go, because this is our country. This is the best country. And first off, we have our loyalty to our country, and then to our families. Country first every time. I think that's it.
Thank you.
1958, I married him. I shocked both my son and my daughter, I guess.
What were your reasons?
Well, it was, I'd like to get out and go places. They were no longer interested in my social life, and they were only interested in theirs. And so I just started going with him, and it just became kind of a natural thing. So I married him. But I found out that everything that I did got all around town. And I said, are you telling everything that happens here? Is that where everybody, they come back and tell me. They tell me how much money I've got. And all that. I said, are you telling this? Oh, no. But I know he must have, because no other way could the word have got out. And then the things that I had there, I had a hose that you could see the water running through it. When I went to use it one day, it wasn't there. And now I said, gee, have you taken my hose someplace? Well, he took it down to his house. And I said, before I married you, you had that place down there. And you moved into my home. What's here is mine. Don't move it. But he kept doing little things like that. And then he got in a fight with the city council and the mayor. And of course, because I was right across the street from the city hall, they took it out on me. they begin fining me for the rubbish wasn't put out in the right container, which it was, but up until then it was, but after that it wasn't. And then this mayor was so mad at him, she took his surfrider surfboards away, stations away from him, and she told the electric company she wanted a pole put right in the middle of the garages. I had four in back, so that two garages couldn't be used. Well, they didn't do it. They told me about it, and they said they'd put it down so the garages wouldn't be obstructed. And it just got, you know, it got on my nerves, upsetting. So I just put the place up for sale, and, oh, yes, the mayor had a friend, and she told them that they could put up a library right next door, put it right on the line. So I put the place up for sale, and I sold it. And right away, why he wanted me to put my money in on his vacant property on the beach. And I said, my name's not on the deed. No way will I put any of my money on that. I said, I worked hard for that money to build that house. Well, he kept after it. So I knew that any way I invested that money, he could come in for half of it. That's California law. So I bought a place out in Garden Grove, and I had him sign the papers where he had no involvement in it. I said, now I'm buying this with the intention of Bob taking it on a cow bet. That's going to be his legacy. So there was nothing he could do. He signed the papers. He had nothing to do with the place. And so Bob filed his papers to take over, and he took that up. Well, that made him so furious that he began taking the bottle to bed with him. Well, that was okay with me. As long as he left me alone and played with the bottle, I didn't care. So that was pretty much a divided house then. It was a rude awakening for me to think that not one but two men were out to take everything I had from me. Then he wanted me to buy a mobile home so that we could move into it. And I wouldn't. I bought a new car. And I said, now you don't have any insurance, so don't drive the car. But every time I leave the car home, I did ride with other people so that it would cut down on gas and cut down on the cost. And sometimes I'd take my car, and sometimes one of the other four would take theirs. So this one day, I had left the car home, gone to work with the other four riders. And I no sooner got to work than my sister called. She called the office. And they called me up. The office was up high so they could look out over the whole department. The foreman called me up there and said I was wanted on the phone. And it was my sister. She said she was sending her son after me, that she had been in an accident. And I said, how bad? And she said, I better not say anything right now, but it's pretty bad. he was killed instantly. And his son and my sister's son had witnessed the accident. So when I got home, there was nothing else to do but just wait for them. And his son wanted to be the executor for the estate. Well, I had no objection. But when it come down to it, they felt that I would be just out of the whole thing. There was no recourse for me because he had left a will and said that I was to get nothing. However, I was married to him 5 years, and under California law, I was entitled to half of everything he left. But I'm not grasping. I told him to come and get everything that was their father's. And then I filed suit for the two grandchildren he had who were fatherless, so that they would get their share of the estate. And in that way, I got part of it too. I didn't get everything. I didn't want, really. I just felt that if I got just as much as each one of them did, that would be fair. Their mothers worked for it too, and so I got $10,000, which was what was between six of them, what the estate was valued at, and at that time, and what the children would get would be 1/6, and I thought that was fair. And the attorney said I was being more fair than most women would be. So that was just one of those things. It wasn't, well, it hurt for a long time to think that he had taken, he had lived in my house, taken of my hospitality and of my life for those 5 years. And all he was after was what he could get out of me. So that ended it. Since that time, I lived there on, lived on there with my son until he decided he was getting married. And then I moved out. I moved into an apartment in Long Beach and kept on until I was going to be 65. Which is 63 until 67. That's 4 years. And I kept on working, and I went on days then, and worked the rest of the time on days. And well, I just worked from day to day to the end, hoping that I'd have enough to retire on when I was 65. And everybody was nice, and there was no longer any feelings, hard feelings, except, oh, there was a few of the women, because they were younger, thought that it'd be nice if I wouldn't quit, so they could have that seniority. But other than that, no, I think they all realized that I had to work in order to make it on retirement. But it was more serene the last 4 years than any time. I was no longer working for advancement. I was up there as high as I could get. The war was over, and the Korean conflict was over, and we had just started in on the Vietnam thing, but I was working to the end for retirement.
Was there an adjustment for you after your second husband died?
No, not really. Not really. No, I saw how things were going, and I was undecided whether I'd be able to take it him too much longer, whether I'd get a divorce, or whether I'd just make do and be a jump ahead of him on the money end of things. No, there was really no readjustment, because my sister was also a widow, and she was having her problems with the plumbing shop and her grandchildren, and so I just more or less fell into going with her and the grandchildren. And she and I did take a couple of trips alone. And it was real nice. We got along so good together there. And then I took a trip to Alaska. And she didn't want me to know that she was taking her grandson along. So the day we got on the plane, I found out. Of course, I wasn't very happy because I was still working, and that was in 1965. We took the trip to Alaska, and he was 8 years old, and it was really kind of spoiled the vacation, but I still enjoyed what I saw. It was marvelous. Alaska is the most beautiful state. And I met a lot of nice people, and I enjoyed the places we went to. And then after that, I planned a trip to the Gaspé Peninsula, and I was going to drive.
Where is that?
Right off Maine.
Okay.
That's in Nova Scotia.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And that was a nice trip. And I took my brother's widow with me. And we had a real nice trip. She had never been further east than Missouri, and so it was a nice trip for her, and it was a nice trip for me. I enjoyed every bit of it, especially around in Halifax, and the Gaspé Peninsula was just fabulous. There Waikokana, there was bagpipers. They get out in the street and blow their bagpipes. Well, they had to, because those were so loud. They wouldn't dare blow them in the house. And around Quebec, it was very fascinating. There was very, very beautiful things there. But there in Halifax, I had a man drive my car who was familiar with the city, and he took us to all these walled cities and everything, and he took us to this church. With in 1917, two ammunition ships had collided in the harbor, and it had leveled the city, and there was pieces of shrapnel on this church, and the church was up on the hill, and there was a piece of shrapnel embedded in the wood, a great big piece. And he said that 30 years after that explosion, disaster, there was people still having shrapnel removed from their bodies. So